Welcome back. Our OTR guest this week is a senior Democratic member of the House Budget Committee. He's Detroit Representative Tyrone Carter. Our lead story, a stalemate on how to spend federal COVID dollars, and Republican Senate leader Mike Shirkey's in trouble. On the OTR panel, Shana Roth, Riley Began, and Bill Ballinger. Sit in with us as we get the inside out off the record.
Production of Off the Record is made possible in part by the following. Business Leaders for Michigan has a strategic plan to make Michigan a top 10 state in the nation for jobs, personal income, and a healthy economy. Learn more at michiganswroadtotop10.com. And now, this edition of Off the Record with Tim Skubick.
Thank you very much, and thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to join us here on Off the Record. And we say this every week, but it's true every week. Goodness gracious, lots of stuff going on. Let's say good morning to our panelists. We have Shana and Riley and Bill Ballinger. How are all the three of you doing? You all okay?
Doing well.
Excellent. Well, let's see if we can change that. Let's start, Riley, out with you. Is it fair to call this a stalemate on the COVID spending with the governor in one corner and the Republicans in another?
I mean, I think it was. And obviously, until something happens, it will be. But I think we probably will see movement on this soon. The political pressure here is so high. I mean, it's COVID, it's vaccines. This is the stuff that people are waking up every day and thinking about, talking about before they go to bed. They need to get this done. And I will say, from what we're seeing in the GOP, which I know we're going to be talking about later in this show, you know, they've lost a lot of their leverage here. So I don't really see Governor Whitmer giving a lot on this.
Shaden, what's your take on this?
Yeah, I mean, I think that this is probably, especially going into the budget coming up, this is Republicans still really trying to hold on to some semblance of power as it continues to whittle down in a lot of ways, you know, and I think that they're finding that trying to get the governor to relinquish some of her power, not just for herself, but for all future governors going forward, is a tactic that is just probably not going to work. I mean, that's probably why the Senate has kind of taken a lot of those provisions out of their proposals for spending. But I think what they're going to find is that when people realize that this is money that Republicans are trying to leave on the table for things like vaccine distributions and the economy, I mean, they're just not going to be happy about it.
Mr. Ballinger, reason the Republicans say they want to, just a second, the Republicans say they want to leave this stuff on the table, Bill, because they want to have accountability. They want to make sure that the taxpayers are getting their money worth and not just writing a blank check. The governor says, look, we got $5 billion. If we don't spend it, somebody else will. Who's right in this argument?
They're both right. And the issue is the politics. I mean, look, legislature should be in a stronger position right now than it is. After all, the legislature has the power of the purse. The governor cannot appropriate this money by herself. The legislature has to do it. The problem is, as Shana has indicated, and Riley as well, the Republican majority in the House and Senate kind of frittered away a lot of their argument and moral high ground on the things they say are important. And I think what they're saying is important. There should be balance. There should be accountability by the governor and by the spenders, the legislature, on what happens to this money. But the problem is they've made so many mistakes, including, and I know you're going to talk about it, the verbal missteps, shall we call them, by the Senate Majority Leader, that they're just weakening their position day by day.
Well, how does that weaken their position?
They just are not going to get the support in the news media and the general electorate, the public, for anything they argue, even if it has nothing to do with the issues that they're arguing on. Because the things that they say and that they sound like, if they're weak and wobbly and they look negative and they look dangerous and unlikable, the public and the electorate and the news media are not going to support their position. They're going to be sympathetic with anything the governor wants. And right now she's saying, send me the money, all of it, all $5.5 billion and let's not nitpick over all these little snarfy details that you people keep bringing up.
All right. So at the center of this, as all of you have indicated here this morning, is Senator Mike Shirkey, the Senate Republican leader. And here's what that story was all about this week.
Today, with a firestorm of criticism flowing around him, Mr. Shirkey sought divine guidance.
We need your grace and your Holy Spirit in our lives more than ever. And that's everybody, including and especially me. But sometimes we get off track.
The senator ends his chat with the Lieutenant Governor Garland Gilchrist here, but decides to come back for more remarks captured on a hot mic. In that exchange, Mr. Shirkey says the word hoax did not apply to the riot at the Capitol, but he also said he stood by his other comments, which included talking about a fist fight with Governor Whitmer on the Capitol lawn and, quote, spanking her, end quote, on the state budget. Afterwards, the lieutenant governor labeled it, quote, his so-called apology that was not heartfelt, without humanity and understanding. For her part, Governor Whitmer was asked, is she buying Mr. Shirkey's comments now about the hoax? The governor wouldn't comment.
I'm not interested in even engaging with someone who should be helping lead through this moment, who wants to, you know, make violent comments about me personally. I'm going to stay focused on my job. And when the leadership in the legislature is ready to be leaders, they'll find a willing partner in me.
The governor says she's been extending the olive branch to the Republicans to work on the federal COVID spending issue. So she was asked if she was willing to forgive the senator for his remarks aimed at her.
What? Tim, what? The person against whom the violence was directed should reach out to the person that is proposing that violence and what? Tim, I'm too busy to get too caught up in any of that.
Mr. Shirkey says he wants to meet in person with the governor to discuss these issues. The governor says the Zoom meetings are working, and she leaves it at that.
This is a group of people who haven't been able to keep themselves safe from COVID. Locking everyone in a room right now would be inadvisable for a lot of reasons.
So, Riley, what kind of trouble is the senator in vis-a-vis his own caucus? Is there a problem there?
That's an interesting question. I'm not sure, but I think that could be a good litmus test for what is going to happen going forward. We're seeing that within the GOP from the federal level to the state level, and obviously within the party as of the convention last weekend. So I think the way that people react to this is going to be an interesting marker of whether they can come together in the future. I mean, the political heat has been rising for months and months and months and months. And, you know, something needs to break. And I think that the people who are speaking those words probably are the ones who should come forward and say that. But, you know, it'll be interesting to see the way that people react to that, I guess.
Bill, the interesting thing here is that the general public might not give two hoots about this, but the business community is watching this and watching this very closely. I had a source tell me yesterday some businesses are upset with Mr. Shirkey's conduct and his remarks and are closing their checkbooks for Mr. Shirkey. Anything wrong with that if you're a Republican state senator?
I think you should be very upset if you are a Republican state senator. Yeah, Blue Cross Blue Shield said they might not have come to Shirkey's fundraiser the other day if they'd known about his latest comments. Look, Tim, the bottom line is loose lips sink ships, okay? Mike Shirkey has got to put a sock in it. You know, we can't have, if you're the Republican caucus, they've had his back so far, and there's no apparent danger to his being the majority leader going forward. But how much more of this can they take? A lot of it is due to technology and social media. Politicians have been making stupid remarks off camera, out of sight, to constituents in their districts for years and decades, and it's never been picked up on an iPhone and sent all over the world. Now it is. And Mike Shirkey has got to realize that. He's been burned several times on this matter, And then he makes things worse by going right up to Garland Gilchrist and saying what he said. So, look, you and I remember, Tim, back in 1977, Bill Fitzgerald was the Senate Democratic leader, and at that time they were in the majority. And he literally made himself so unpopular in his caucus, they fired him, and they replaced him with Bill Faust. Now, that's the last time it's really happened in the middle of a leadership tenure, but it could happen again if it keeps going.
All right, Ms. Roth, is it significant that Mr. Shirky found it necessary to say that I will not resign? That says two things, I think. One, that he doesn't want to resign, but two, maybe he's heard the chatter that some folks might want him to resign?
Yeah, I mean, I mean, granted, whenever something like this happens, I think an instinct is to kind of try and get out ahead of any sort of anybody putting out there that you should resign or would resign or might resign. I think that this has been anybody who has covered Senator Mike Shirky for any period of time is probably not super surprised by these remarks. As Bill mentioned, this is not the first time, nor will it probably be the last time that he has been caught saying things that are just not appropriate. However, right now, he's also in a situation where his county has essentially censured him, saying that he has not done enough to combat Governor Whitmer and her COVID restrictions. So, I mean, he's getting it kind of from both sides. Now he's going to be getting it from people who disagree with these types of, you know, sexist, you know, violent, you know, weird, crazy remarks that he is making, you know, claiming that January 6th was a hoax is just not okay or funny right now or ever. And so, you know, he's got that problem. And then he's also got members of his own party saying that he's not being Republican enough. So, I mean, he's in a really bad bind right now. And I don't know how he's going to get out of it, but saying coming out ahead and saying, I'm not resigning, I guess is something that he's going to have to do. And I would not be surprised if a part of the reason for that is people are saying, we got to get rid of this guy.
Well, let's be clear here. He said he did not say the events at the Capitol on January 6th was the hoax. He was explaining to the lieutenant governor and explained, I guess, afterwards, Bill, that it was that there was somebody behind this who pre-planned this whole situation. And he said the FBI will identify that person down the road. How does that play, William?
Tim, he better be hoping and praying that the FBI comes out with a smoking gun here in a couple of weeks and a big name showing this is the villain behind the riot at the Capitol. And let's start there. Because if the FBI doesn't produce such a person, and if there are all these lingering doubts out there about everything that Shirky has said with respect to January 6th, I think he's going to look very foolish. So he's going to have to be bailed out, and I wouldn't want to be him at this point.
Well, he also said it was staged, which kind of indicates that he just isn't a little bit beyond, you know, that there's just somebody behind it. You know, saying that it was staged is, I think, a step further than just saying, well, there's somebody that was behind, you know, the insurrection that took place. It's further peddling of conspiracy theories, which is, you know, there's just a lot of that going on right now, and it doesn't really have a place, I would imagine, in Michigan politics, in the Michigan legislature.
All right, let's ask our guest to join the conversation, Representative Tyrone Carter, Democrat of Detroit. Good morning, sir. How you doing?
Good morning. I'm doing well, Tim. Thanks for having me.
All right, so we've been chatting about Mr. Shirky. When you first heard this stuff, what was the first thought that went through your mind?
He'd be better off being quiet right now. I mean, we're in some serious negotiations. He'd be much better just to let it go. And then to add almost an insult to it later with the lieutenant governor, it doesn't serve him nor his party and his leadership well at this point. And this is what I always say, leadership matters. And if he's the leader of that party and he's making these statements and he feels that way, then sometimes he gives the opportunities for others who may not feel that way, but it gives them the opportunity to say things that they really shouldn't. So a sincere apology would serve him better.
Shana, jump in here.
Well, I'm curious, Rep. Carter, how do you see, given that, you know, Shirky is not going anywhere in the foreseeable future, how do you see this playing out with negotiations for the upcoming COVID package? We have a budget coming up soon. I mean, is this going to, you know, further fracture an already very difficult relationship between the legislature and the governor?
Well, I think any, if he wanted to come in with a level of equality that we're going to negotiate and bargain on the same level, he's lost a lot of that leverage with his remarks recently. And he's also lost a lot of support that he may have had in the general public. Because to make those statements in this environment at this time, I think doesn't serve him well, nor his party.
Riley.
Representative, go ahead.
Go ahead, Bill.
I was just going to ask whether Representative Carter believes that Jason Wentworth's position as Speaker, and he's new, differs markedly from Senator Shirky in your estimation, and isn't that really more important in terms of relationship with the governor than Mike Shirky, as far as you're concerned, in the House?
Yes, I think that, you know, Speaker Wentworth probably has a different look on it, but he still is a part of the party. So he would serve the House well to kind of put some distance. And I read his statement. And I thought that was really well done to show the people that, you know what, I don't feel that way. We still have work to do, and we need to sit down and hammer this out to benefit the people of the state of Michigan. So I agree with you that, you know, Speaker Wentworth may be taking a different a view of this.
Riley.
So a colleague of mine made a good point yesterday that Senator Shirky's sort of been the roadblock to transparency packages passing through the legislature. And these statements were caught on hot mic and on a secretly recorded video. Is this an indication that there's time for a transparency package, that this is the moment to get it done?
You know, that's a great question. I received a text the other day from a reporter in Detroit from Channel 7 asking really the same question about a transparency package. And, you know, I told him that Rep. David LeGrand has been working on this for 6 years. A lot of Democrats have signed on to it. I think this gives a huge push to that package because we're what, one of only two states that don't do it right now. So I think that a lot of, I don't want to say negative things or positive things, are going to come out of this latest Shirky episode.
Representative, put your hat on as on the committee for the state police budget on House Appropriations. When you first heard they were exchanging messages that weren't going to be available to FOIA, Freedom of Information Act, what did you think about that?
I thought about during this time, with everything that's going on negative with policing, for you all to do that in leadership, it ruins some of your credibility that you have in the communities and even in the law enforcement community. For leadership to do this and to be caught and now exposed, why do it? I need to understand why you felt the need to do it.
Well, Representative, you're a former police officer yourself. Don't the police have to communicate with one another without everybody and his uncle looking in on the conversation? Could be sensitive material, couldn't it?
Well, a genius in this day and time would know not to send any text messages on government phones. Coded or uncoded.
This was my words, not yours, a stupid mistake.
I don't know if you call that a mistake if everybody's doing it. If you have a circle that's doing it, and you know what has happened with text messages in the past, I think there could have been another avenue.
Representative,
Gina?
Let me ask you,
go ahead,
what
Bill.
about the resistance in the African American community to getting COVID-19 vaccine shots? Is it getting any less of a threat to the African-American population?
You know what? I've had the shot, and the other day I took my, let me say, the city of Detroit is doing a fabulous job with COVID. And we went there the other day for 2 hours. And so this misinformation about the African-American community not wanting the shot is not what I saw. It's not what I know. I have people calling me as their state rep requesting, when can we get the shot? How can we get the shot? So And I'll just say this. My sister's a medical doctor. She used to be with Henry Ford. She's with Blue Cross now. Her conversation with me, siblings, and anybody that will listen is, you need to explain to me why you won't get the shot. If you got a vaccination for polio, if you get a flu shot, you need, this has been the most transparent study ever. You need to get me to understand why you would take your chances without the vaccine, and we watch people die who would have jumped in line to get it. And as a COVID survivor, if I could have been first in line, and it's not about me, it's about protecting the people that I love. So what I've witnessed, and probably what you're seeing now as well, this misinformation that the Black community doesn't want it, I totally disagree from what I've observed, what I've heard, and what I've actually seen.
Dana.
Rep Carter, kind of bouncing off of that a little bit, given that there's some, quite a bit of money hanging out there that we're waiting to allocate for vaccines and the vaccine distribution, what are some things that you would like to see in order for the state to be even more successful or to be successful with this vaccination rollout? Well, what else do we need to be doing and where should that money be going?
I think they're expanding it to places that are rural. And if we, first you have to have the equipment because of, you know, the temperature that it has to be at. But as we move forward, I know that Johnson & Johnson is working on theirs as well. But right now, I think that the city of Detroit can be a model for what's being done. We're talking about sending it to senior citizens in churches now in two designated areas in the city of Detroit. So as we expand it, we wouldn't have to expand it if a lot of people didn't want it. So this says to me that more people want it, so we have to open it up. I know, you know, I cover District 6, which is Ecorse, Rouge, and Detroit. And I know that the Myers in Southgate near me has been doing a fantastic job as well. So I think if we can get more money to do this, hopefully we can get more people immunized before, I think we're looking at maybe the fall now or late summer. You know, the more opportunities we present, I think that the sooner we can come out of this and see a sense of normalcy.
Riley.
So we're beginning a budget negotiation process. What is a non-negotiable for you? And do you see any potential roadblocks to this process going forward?
You know what? Everything's negotiable. Everything's worthy of a conversation. We have to sit down and have realistic, because there's three things that are COVID. It's COVID, COVID, COVID all day. And from COVID comes the economic recovery for small businesses. From COVID comes the ability to send our children to schools to get back together. So we've got to sit down and have an honest, reasonable conversation that's not based on, I mean, I could go with District 6, which is the hospitality district. I have the casinos, every stadium, hotels, restaurants, and they've all been shuttered for at least 2 months. So we need to have a conversation about how this has impacted not just my district, but the entire state. You know, there's nothing non-negotiable. We need to sit down and figure out our priorities. And my priorities are COVID, economic recovery, and getting the money for getting people back in school, utility and rent payments that you know, have gone, and food security and the water shutoffs. We need to address that now.
Representative, let's talk about life on the floor of the Michigan House on two fronts. Are you comfortable with your colleagues having concealed weapons, and are you packing heat on the floor, sir?
The first question, am I comfortable? Not with all of them. Just because you go to a gun range and you get a CPL doesn't make you qualified to, you're qualified legally to carry a gun, but you know, if something happens, I worry about people that feel like, you know, they're ready. Number two, yes, I do. And it's gotten a little different for me. I used to just carry a certain weapon. Now I make sure I have enough to make sure I need to get to where I got to go if something happens.
Well, are you for banning concealed weapons on the House floor?
Am I for banning? It wouldn't bother me if nobody could carry. If I know that no one has it, then I'm okay. I'd be willing to give mine up because I trust the sergeants and the state police I'm sorry, Bill.
Do you have any idea how many other members also conceal carry?
I have an idea because we had a bill in military and vets last year. So I'm thinking anywhere between 15 and 20 that are CPL holders. But what was interesting, my request to my colleagues is that you let the sergeants on the floor know that you have, you don't have to let us know, your other colleagues. Let the sergeants know because they're in charge of our safety. And if something jumps off, they need to know who's carrying a weapon to stay away from, because there's no such thing as friendly fire when a riot breaks out.
And quickly, the mask issue on the House floor. Are you upset with some of your Republican colleagues who are not masking up?
Yes, I am. I am. Because again, leadership matters. And if you're sitting up there as a, on the other side of the aisle, and you're advocating for resources for COVID, you're talking about frontline workers, and then you don't wear a mask on the floor. You don't wear a mask in committee. We had to walk by Isaac Robinson's desk, who died from it. I had it. I think there's been about 7 or 8 representatives that have had it. So to still sit there and like you're defying something, it's disrespectful to your colleagues, because we still don't have a handle on this. And to sit, I've had some of my colleagues walk out of committees because some of my Republican colleagues did not have masks on. If you respect us, if you're with us, and we're a team, it's 110 of us, and we come from every point, every place in the state, and we meet there. Do us a favor, wear a mask.
Very good. Representative, thanks for joining us on our program. Have fun at the budget briefing later on this morning, and we'll check you on the other side, okay?
All right. Thank you all for having me, and you guys have a great day.
Yes, and thanks to my colleagues who joined us on Off the Record. See us right here next week with another edition of OTR.
Production of Off the Record is made possible in part by the following. Business Leaders for Michigan has a strategic plan to make Michigan a top 10 state in the nation for jobs, personal income, and a healthy economy. Learn more at michigansroadtotop10.com. For more Off the Record, visit WKAR.org. Michigan Public Television stations have contributed to the production costs of Off the Record with Tim Skubick.